Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
And it is hot as Hades.
Hot as Hades. Well, you're so much more eloquent than I, Michael, you know, because you said hot as Hades. And I would say, in the words of my grandfather, hotter than two rats screwing in a wool sock. That's how hot it is.
Well, we're off and running.
If that doesn't provide you with a visual image, I don't know what is. Because that's pretty hot.
I would think it would
hotter
be.
And he didn't say screwing, but that's a whole other thing.
Well,
so we'll just
Grandpa. There you go.
Give him a toast.
Well, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. And to learn more about Breakdown Services, visit them at BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
And as you know, Paul, we've got a jam-packed show today. Excuse me. Three uber-talented stars of Los Angeles theater. In studio with us is the gorgeous Cynthia Ferrer, who's currently co-starring in 3D Theatrical's critically acclaimed production of the classic American Broadway musical, Damn Yankees.
So a little applause her way.
Yeah. I love that introduction. Wow. Thank you.
And Scott Dreyer is also with us in studio. Scott, did I get your last name right?
You did.
Yes. Last night, he debuted in his one-man show, Doris and Me, a heartwarming true story about his fascination with legendary singer-slash-actress Doris Day, highlighted by Scott's take on the Doris Day songbook. Looking forward to talking about that.
Hello, guys. Yes. Thank you for coming out on such a hot day.
But it's cool in here.
It is cool in here. And Cynthia is gorgeous.
Oh, my gosh.
Look at the eyes.
You guys.
The bluest
eyes. Oh, please, stop. Please. Yes.
She does. She has beautiful eyes. I noticed that when she came in.
And Paul, calling in today is a young man who wowed New York audiences in the off-Broadway mega-hit comedy Buyer and Seller and continues to do so in the show's national tour. On stage now through August 17th at the Center Theater Group's Mark Taper Forum. You know him well from his longtime co-starring role as Mark St. James on the popular ABC TV series Ugly Betty. Michael Urey will be joining us in just a few minutes.
Yes, so he's... We're not 100% sure... We're not 100% sure when we're going to get that call, so if we have to pop in and out of it, we ask your forgiveness on this. Michael's dance card is obviously very, very full with his with the show that I saw last night.
And
by the way. I'm very, very enjoyable.
It is fun.
Yes.
It's a funny story. Do you both know the plot of this show?
Yeah. I have tickets later this month to see it. I can't wait.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're in for a big, big treat.
No, it was a lot of fun. So how was your week before we get to Michael?
It was good. I mean, I out there at the theater, I went to the opening of Once Beautiful Pantages Theater, which was a, talk about jam-packed, that was just flooded with people. I mean, it was like a sea of people that you only hoped you could part to get through, but it was a wild experience. Not quite my cup of tea, personally, but I think it is certainly, for many, a show that will be highly seen as it was in New York and certainly on its national tour.
Once?
Yeah. It's a very special story. It's a very different kind of a story and a very different presentation of a love story.
Yeah, we saw it in New York. Monica loved it. She bought the CD immediately.
But it was great fun to be there and most talented cast. And, you know, they play instruments and they act and they're singing and
you know what?
That stuff.
Yes. I think we have a Urey on the phone.
Oh, we do?
I'm not exactly sure, but let me just check here. This is Paul at State of the Arts. Here's hoping this is Michael Urey.
It is.
Hello.
How are you?
You are on the air, and we'll throw some applause your way.
How exciting!
Yes,
there you go.
It's internet radio, so we don't have any screeners. When you call in, you're actually on the airwaves. So welcome, Michael.
Boom, well,
pleasure
thank
having you
very
on the show.
Much.
Hey, Michael, it's Michael Sterling. Thank you for doing this on a day that you're actually going to be working in a few hours. We appreciate that.
That's okay. I don't become Barbra Streisand until about 7:30.
Okay. Michael, I want to tell you, my wife and I were there at last night's performance, actually. We enjoyed it tremendously, as did the audience that gave you the barn-burning standing ovation that you received at the Mark Taper Forum last night.
That's so nice. I love barn-burning. That's so very appropriate for our play.
Yes, it is. Yes, you'll have to see the play to get the joke that he's referring to. I could say mill burning.
It was a good crowd last night. I'm glad you were there. It was a lot of fun. You know, this show, it's funny how this show, you know, I've been doing this show for a long time now, and it is, I'm all by myself. I don't have anybody to bounce off of, but the audience is actually, they do change night to night. I mean, obviously they literally change, but they're different. The makeup of people is different every night, and it really does. It is sort of like having a new co-star every performance.
Oh, it's funny you should say that, because Scott Dreyer, who has a show, one-person show that we'll be talking about later in the show. We were talking about that in the green room before we started, and that when it's a one-person entity on stage, that audience is your co-star. You know, they're just as important to the whole to the overall feeling and everything.
And also what's very interesting is, like, they probably don't realize how important they are to you. And I feel that sometimes, you know, if somebody's crinkling a wrapper, I'll give them a look.
Right.
And they usually don't realize, my sense is they don't realize that I'm looking at them, because they don't think that I'm even aware of them. They're like, they can't possibly be looking at me.
Right. It's a TV sodden culture. Everyone thinks that you're just up there on a screen, and they can't hear them or see them or anything like that.
Yeah. Last night there was a woman, hopefully she wasn't with you, there was a woman in like the second row. I don't know if you heard her, but I heard her about halfway through the show, I heard her go,
Look, Michael, if my wife bothered you, just come out.
I heard her go, "What time is it now?"
Oh, that's just...
Hey, Michael, it's Michael Sterling. Let me ask you a question for our listening audience. Why don't you tell the folks exactly what the plot of this beautiful comedy is?
Okay, so it is the completely fictional tale of a completely fictional guy who gets hired to work in the totally real street of shops that Barbra Streisand has in the basement of her barn. So she built this big, huge compound in Malibu, which has a big, beautiful main house, and then a barn. It looks like a barn from the outside. It's really just another house on the inside. And in the basement of the barn, instead of storage for all of her collectibles, she built a mall. She built a street of shops. It looks like a European arcade down there. Huh. And there's a doll shop and a gift shoppy and a dress shop and
a yogurt and shop. Where,
and,
yeah.
And there's a sweet shop where she the door is labeled sweet shop, and there's a yogurt machine and a popcorn maker inside the sweet shop. And so Jonathan Tolan's the brilliant mind behind Buyer and Seller, he made a joke at a party one night, said, "How'd you like to be the guy who works down there?" And the rest is history.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, and you know what, Michael, one of the things that I appreciated so much about it, and you can, of course, expand on this, is that you don't do, and you even make a point, or the script makes a point of commenting on it early on, you don't do a Streisand impersonation, because we've seen that a dozen times over. But the characterization that you do of the lady of the house is almost like this, because the world is fictional, it's almost like a fictional Streisand. Did you come up with that characterization on your own? Was that heavily directorially influenced? How did that come about?
Well, yeah, I mean, there was a lot of trial and error for the whole piece, you know, figuring out how to put this. No one had done it before, so figuring out how to put this piece on its feet and give it to an audience and make it clear and make the dialogue, because there's a lot, it's probably half dialogue scenes, and to create a dialogue scene with one guy between two people was something we had to sort of figure out. And Barbra herself, playing Barbra herself, of course, I give that great caveat at the beginning that says that gives me license to not be good at Barbra, and I think that is partially because, you know, you don't want to have to cast an actor who can do, you know, perfect mimicry of Barbra Streisand. But the other hand is, we don't want it to just be an impression or a character, right. or you know, it doesn't want to be SNL, and it doesn't want to be like a drag act, because those rely on, you know, jokes and funny and you know a couple of traits. You hang your hat on a couple of traits for a character, and then you got the character, and that's all, and then it's jokes. And this really is a story. This is really a play with conflict and the
journey that your character takes.
And like, if you just did a few little things of Barbara, that would get old. So we really had to create this whole character. And also, I was really keen to make sure that it was somebody that everyone who knows and loves Barbara could recognize, and also someone that would be unique enough and compelling enough to anyone who doesn't know her. And I know that sounds crazy, but there have been some people who don't know who she is that have come to see the play. And thanks to John, who has created this character that really feels like as you said, sort of a fictional version of her. Sort of, it's almost like historical fiction,
right?
Based on everything that everyone says about her in the play, and based on what I do in the play, even if you don't have your preconceived idea of Barbara Streisand, you should sort of create one around what I'm doing. And then if you do know exactly what she looks like and what she sounds like and how she moves, then what I'm giving you is a great sort of like a beginning to what you can, and then, you know, I give you like a little taste, and then you paint
exactly
the picture around.
My wife made that comment, just sort of like, he's giving you enough of a framework to sort of fill in your own Barbara as needed. You know, that was an observation
that's
she made.
Exactly right. As needed, and as needed is a great way, because sometimes you really want to imagine, mm-hmm. you know, Meet the Fockers or Where We Were, or right. or even like, you know, What's Up, Doc? You want to like think, oh, that's who she's being now, or that's the Barbara I remember. Or
the hooker from Nuts, you know, the crazy hooker from Nuts, which was one of her best.
Michael, crazy hooker from Nuts.
Yeah.
Michael, is it true that, I mean, it's been rumored now that Ms. Streisand is coming to see your performance at the Tabor. Has that happened, or is that still, or is that just
not yet?
Yeah,
she hasn't come yet. Don't know if she will. You know, she's planning on coming. People close to her have been, people who know her have been. I think, you know, spies have come, but I'm not exactly sure what, you know, she really thinks. And I mean, I think she's probably flattered. My sense is that the people who are seeing it and talking to her say, it's great, it's fun, you don't need to go.
It's so affectionate, though, Michael. It really is.
It's
affectionate, and I'm hesitant to say affectionate, because affectionate sounds like it's going to be cloyingly sweet or anything like that, and it's not that at all. It's an affectionate. It's got a wonderful, edge to it, and I really enjoyed it. I want to make sure that we throw this information out there. For tickets for buyer and seller are available by calling 213-628-2772, and of course you can visit the Center Theater Group box office. That's Center Theater. Theater has the RE spelling, centertheatergroup.org, or in person at the Center Theater Group box office at the Amundsen Theater. Tickets start at $25. I can't believe this. It's just one of the great things about LA theater. Mark Tape performs, located at the Music Center, 135 North Grand Avenue in downtown Los Angeles.
And indeed, and if
there are seats there. You know, the theater is thrust, so it's like a big cone. The audience is like a big cone, and I'm told that even the side seats, which might not look on the website like they're any good, I'm told that even those seats are really good.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, and my wife was right in the second row, and she really enjoyed it, but she just couldn't figure out what time it was, so she had to ask all of her neighbors. But aside from that, it was actually very enjoyable.
Michael, you're also taking the show. You're in the middle of its national tour. What are the next tour stops for you? I know San Francisco's involved.
San Francisco is next, and then Dallas, and then it'll play in Toronto, not with me, with somebody else, and then beyond. There might be some stuff in the new year too.
Very nice,
Michael. Thank you so much for joining
us.
We have two other brilliantly talented people here in studio with us that we're going to get to next, but we're really grateful that you found the time to call.
Well, thank you very much. It was my pleasure, and I'm so glad you came to the show. And thanks for having me on.
And Michael, really nice to meet you on opening night when I approached you about State of the Art. So thank you for pulling through for us.
Absolutely. Thank you. Right, thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
What a nice guy.
Lovely.
Very nice. Yeah.
Lovely and really super talented.
Yeah. No, he was great. He really did. He's just burned it down. Burned it down. Yeah. Our next guest has been on stage in Los Angeles as Violet in 3D Theatricals productions of 9 to 5.
Woo-hoo.
Her work in national tours includes Happy Days, a new musical, Singing in the Rain, and appearances with Cal Burnett and Michael Feinstein. No stranger to television, she has guest starred on such episodic shows as Crossing Jordan, Judging Amy, and had a recurring role as Dr. Rachel Ryan on the daytime hit series General Hospital. She's back on the boards now, co-starring in 3D Theatricals' spectacular production of Damn Yankees, currently at the Historic Plummer Auditorium in Fullerton, California through July 27th. And then I love that 3D does this. And then the reopening at the Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center in Southern California, August 2nd through August 10th. Please welcome the lovely, the gifted Cynthia Farrar.
Wow.
Hey.
I'll never go home now.
You can stay all night long.
How are you?
I am so good. Yeah, I'm are having you? A great time here. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, well, had to do that after seeing the show. Paul hasn't seen the show yet.
I haven't seen it yet.
He is coming to the opening in Redondo.
Oh, yes. Awesome. Yeah. That'd be great.
I'm going to Redondo.
Yeah.
Just easier for me. We live in Tarzana.
Oh, you
so
bet.
What a spectacular.
Of course, now I'll get stalked. Now. That I've revealed.
The They're paparazzi. Buying tickets right this just, very
yes,
moment.
That's right.
What a spectacular revival of this show, though.
You know, right? I'm so proud of this show. Yeah. Yes. You know, you can take a beautiful chestnut like Damn Yankees and you can present it now, and as great as it is, it feels a little dated. And what the challenge was here, that this director, Alan Souza, and Dana Salamando, mm-hmm. our choreographer, and TJ Dawson, the producer, what they stepped up was, they stepped up and made it feel relevant to today.
Absolutely. Mm.
And I'm so proud of that. You know, we all really invest in this material. And with the baseball theme and everything, it just resonates with people and still does. And of course, the music and dancing are spectacular.
Well, indeed. And there's such great performances from the stars and the ensemble. I mean, cast perfectly down to the last person in the ensemble.
I couldn't agree with you more.
You can't go wrong with anybody.
I know. I always marvel at where they find all these fantastically talented people. The boys, and I will say boys, that are baseball players, you know, they're all in their early 20s and some are still in, you know, like early college years. Mm-hmm. They are some of the most talented men I have worked with in a long time. They sing, dance, and act brilliantly.
Yeah?
Yeah.
They do. There's a lot of energy up there on mm-hmm. that stage. And your character of Meg Boyd, who is married to Joe Boyd,
right.
Who later becomes Joe Hardy,
right.
The reincarnation of himself,
right.
Is a very centrifugal force in this musical.
I love that you say that. You know, I'm so used to doing really, really big roles in shows. And then when I read this, I said, oh, wow, I just don't have that much to do. But it felt that what I was doing was very important. And I guess that's how it reads from the audience, too.
No, definitely. So. It's a moment you kind of wait for your character to come on stage and see what's next, you know, from your perspective of what's going on.
Right.
And that I don't know whether this is a piece of direction for Mr. Souza. I have a feeling it was his own when you and young Joe Hardy and Joe Boyd sing that ballad.
Isn't that a beautiful moment?
It is. It's an amazing moment.
Yeah, they pulled that from the revival. That is the revival. When they did the revival, the revival's not released for us to do.
Right.
You can only do the original version, but they will allow you to pull some of the song arrangements from
that
the revival.
That was from, about 1993, I think?
Oh, I never thought about that. That you wouldn't have, like, legalities regarding a revival, and yet you could get an original version of it, but not rights to the revival?
Isn't that funny?
Yeah,
they do that
It's
sometimes.
That way with, like, How to Succeed, the same mm-hmm. thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, the estate doesn't allow the revival to be the one that's produced regionally.
Huh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm. So
that's very interesting.
But we were able to get those beautiful orchestrations and arrangements, and I get to sing it with two men who have just exquisite voices, and so I'm a very lucky girl. And
yes,
there's a lot of
are.
Smoke involved, and you know, star drop behind me and spotlights. So it's magic, and that's what we do.
Absolutely, and you know who she's talking about. One of them is from LA's Next Great Stage Star, which I produce, of course, every
yes.
year, and we're so proud of him, Cameron Boyd, who was one of our top competitors this year.
Yeah,
and he's had quite a. He was able to quit his job for which he went to school and studied in business, and he did that whole thing.
He
is now out there. You just starred as Rapunzel Prince in Into the Woods for 3D,
right.
And now in this starring role,
right,
as Joe Hardy.
Right.
And he doesn't disappoint in any sort of way, does he?
No, he certainly does not. No. Yeah. He's a wonderful
actor. He's
got a big
career
ahead of him. Yeah, great presence on stage and beautiful voice.
So. That's a sort of that's become sort of a training ground, the LA's Next Great Stage Star. You've churned out a lot of talent out of there,
a lot of
Broadway debuts. And
We have our 10th competitor making their Broadway debut right now in Book of Mormon.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So great.
Yeah, they come out, they come into the competition kind of as amateurs and they leave, on the professional road
That's
to
so great.
Success.
And it's so encouraging, too. I don't know if either of you had a chance to see Michael's, the competitions that they do there, but it's all about, it's not snarky. It's not, it's all about encouraging them and advising them and everything.
That's great.
Actually going to perform in LA's Next Great
You were
going to
compete?
I had a conflict.
What was that?
I can't sing or dance.
Oh.
Okay. Anyway. Cynthia, do you...
That's such a teeny conflict.
Little hiccup. Now, you've worked with 3D theatricals before?
I have. I did 9 to 5.
Okay. I'm sorry, I asked the wrong...
No, that's okay.
I asked the wrong question. What I meant was this particular creative team, this director, this producer, have you worked with them?
I have worked with TJ before, who is the producer, TJ Dawson, and of course his brothers and sisters and their whole group down there. I have been lucky enough to work for them a few times. And Alan Souza, the director, and Dana Salamando, I have not worked with in this capacity before. Mm-hmm. And they are both really spectacular. It's a very quick schedule, what we do. Mm-hmm. And for the fact that we were able to really dig into the book and really get some wonderful acting beats going and really consider all that, and like I said, give it almost a contemporary feel so it feels relevant, was our challenge. And Alan... insisted on it, and it was wonderful because it made us all kind of, step up. When you do what we do, and we do it very fast, sometimes you do have your bag of tricks, that you go, okay, well, I know what this is. I'll pull this one out. You got to just kind of rely on that stuff. And he would not allow us to do that. And I loved it. I was like, ooh, okay. Okay, let me go think about this one and come back with something brilliant,
So. And that is so true because, in a musical comedy like this, which is dated back into the 50s, mm-hmm. I mean, the timeline and the actual show was also done in the 50s. It instead of these bigger than life characters, which may be hard to believe mm-hmm. or become involved with personally, that's all been pushed aside by what she's saying with Alan's take on this.
Right.
And you really do get to care about your character,
Joe
Hardy and everybody. You get it all, even as over the top as some of them can be.
But that's the issue and it's nice to hear because that's the issue that I have with so many musicals. Don't get me wrong, I love musicals, but so many of them are just like people, screaming their lines from the edge of a cliff because of the size that the way the character has been written and the grand canvas of it. And when you can get something like that, that's why I have a tendency to like the more character-driven musicals like this one.
But if I could speak to that for a minute. I feel that a character can be really big as long as it's always really honest.
Right. So long as it's true.
So true to this character, then you buy it as an audience member. You buy it all the way.
Yeah, perfect. Hedwig is a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
Extravagant character, but played so truthfully, and the poignant moments are the most powerful things in that show.
I get to say things like, oh my goodness, oh my gosh, well, say, you really have brought me luck. And so, but what you have to do is you have to, so in my mind, I'm thinking, hold on just a second, a WTF kind of thing,
Right.
And then put that into it and just say those words, say the 50s words.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly.
And then somehow we start to feel relevant.
Yeah.
And
it's called Hitting the Target Without Them Hearing the Shot.
That's very good.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
But the direction helps, I think. It's so great that you have that.
Because
don't you find, especially when you've done a role a lot, one of my least favorite things to hear from a director is, what did you do before?
Oh, yeah.
I never want to do what I did before. I want to do what we're doing now.
Right.
So it sounds like you had such a lovely director.
That's a director I would question. Because I was like, I don't want to work too hard.
But also think about that we put shows up so quickly.
Yeah,
so oftentimes you're hired because of your experience with the show.
Gotcha.
So they want you to bring to the...
Good
but,
point.
I want to start from... It sounds like you have that with your director.
Absolutely. We found the time. But the beauty of 3D is that part of the reason why it goes so fast is so that they can keep the cost down so that they can offer offer this to families, and it doesn't have to cost you an arm and a leg to take your family to the theater, to family-friendly theater, and expose your children and get them loving it early on, because with everything out there that's video games and all that stuff, there is still no connection that happens like it happens in the theater. Even if you don't have a theater kid, if you have a sports kid, there's a connection that happens there, an excitement, because they are part of the show. They contribute to the show.
And and what they get, it will never be duplicated. What happened in that room that evening will never happen again.
That's right. And
that's a real gift to give people. Plus, and not to be cold and monetary about the whole thing, but we as performers, this is a demographic that we have to bring in.
We have to,
because the median age of the ticket buyer is 62 years old right now.
Right.
We have to get them involved, and it's not like we're getting them involved because we want their money, but we know what joy there is to offer, you know. And once again, kudos to 3D Theatricals, because what they put up is the family friendly. And the other thing too is that people should know this. And Michael, if you would give the information for the tickets, that they're very, in addition to being very short rehearsal periods, they're very short runs. So you always get, you get the wonderful contagion of good groups to be with. But I want to make sure people know that it is a brief run at both of the locations.
It is, as we said earlier, through July 27th at the historic Plummer Auditorium in Fullerton, California, Damn Yankees will play, and it will then reopen at the Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center August 2nd through August 10th. For tickets, it's very, very simple. You can either call 714-589-2770 or go to their website and purchase tickets at 3DTshows.com.
And they have all that wonderful Facebook and Twitter stuff.
Yes,
too.
Yeah, it's everywhere. And next,
these
up
kids today with the with the Faith Twitter and the
absolutely. Anyway. Before we conclude here with Cynthia, by comparison of all the many shows that you've done, because you've done the national tour of Happy Days and many, many things.
I've been very lucky to make a living in theater for 30. I'm in Equity now for, should I say it, date myself, 33 years.
Wow. I'm a which is amazing since you're 35.
Yeah, my favorite person. Oh, my gosh. So you were saying.
I was just saying, where do you rank this experience with Damn Yankees?
Oh, this is right up there at the top, I have to tell you, because of the fact that you go into it and you go, well, it's Damn Yankees. Yeah, I wonder what we can do with this. This will be interesting. And I literally looked at the script and went, I'm a little lost, and I'm not usually lost. I went, oh, gosh, this is so, this felt creaky to me. And to have such directorial and producers and choreographers who have such clear vision, and the musical director, on what this needed to be and how we were going to present it, made my job easy. Then I just went, okay, I'm on board and I see what you're doing. So that challenge for me and that gift that they gave me ranks up there with just, I'm very proud of this production.
And you should be.
I'm very anxious to see it.
Yeah, you're going to have a great time, Scott. Mr. Paul.
Yes, no, yes, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it.
Monica. You know, before we introduce our next guest, why don't we...
Sorry. No. Go. Sorry. No, my eye.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Sorry.
All right. Why don't we...
I wasn't rolling it.
Famous, you better not be, mister. Why don't we give our listeners a treat and have them listen to the magnificent voice of our next guest. This is not from the show that we're going to be talking about, but it is from his self-titled CD, which you can purchase. Find out about that,
And this is a track called, and Scott, correct me if I'm wrong, is She's in Love with Me?
Oh, sure. Yes, I didn't know which one we were doing. Okay. She's in Love with Me, yes.
You have sang this in the past.
I have. It's written by Burton Nevere, who is famous for writing My Sharona from The Knack.
The Knack. Okay.
Yeah.
Scott Dreyer with She's in Love with Me.
There's a color in the sky today that I've never seen before. Conventional rules don't apply today. I feel so high today, I could roar. It's a miracle, all the trees are doing pirouettes, and the bluebirds would agree that I'm in a tizzy and dizzy with love. wonderful, second to nunderful, lightning and thunderful and quite insane. She chose a bum like me, and now I feel so free. I'll grab the world and spin it. Love that world and everyone in it. Go and shout it from the mountaintop, so the universe can see.
Nice.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
The My Sharona guy wrote
that? Yeah, he was a member of the Knack.
Really?
Yeah.
Did he write Good Girls Don't? That's the other great Knack song.
I have to look that up. Of course I know it. I'm not
speaking
positive.
Of dating yourself.
Yeah.
Speaking of dating
yourself. Yeah, and Rob Muir wrote that song. Two talented writers.
Well, you are listening to the voice of our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, who has been touring the last 2.5 years with his much-lauded one-man musical show, Doris and Me, the Doris Day Songbook, officially opening this evening, July 24th, through August 3rd at the Monroe Forum inside the landmark El Portal Theater located in North Hollywood's trendy NoHo Arts District. A musical theater veteran for over 20 years, Doris and Me is, as press notes describe, one man's quirky, lovable obsession with music and movie icon Doris Day. His successful career also includes appearances in over 50 theatrical productions and has been embraced by television, film, commercials, animation voiceovers, and a best-selling self-titled CD, which we just heard that track from. His enthusiasm for life, his gentle being, his abundance of talent, and his innate showmanship is nothing short of inspirational. Please welcome Scott Dreyer.
Lovely, lovely. I mean, I feel like my mom could have written that. That was so sweet. What a lovely thing to say.
And unfortunately, we're out of time. But thank you, Scott.
See you next week.
No, so Scott, you opened tonight, but last night it was a charitable event.
Like, yeah. The thing that my only caveat, the only thing I wanted to happen with the Los Angeles run, Doris Day turned 90 years old on April 3rd, and I thought, I love celebrating her life, her music, her career, what she means to me, and of course, Doris Day loves animals, as I do, and so I really, really wanted us to have a benefit opening night that would, all the proceeds would go to the Doris Day Animal Foundation. So that's what we did last night, and it was amazing, and some of the guests included six co-stars of Doris Day's from her different films and TV shows, and it was magical to have them all in one room.
Wow. Yeah, very special.
Yeah.
Very special.
I mean, even down to, all of them were extraordinary, but Christopher Olsen, who is Susan Olsen, of course, Cindy Brady, from the Brady Bunch, her older brother, plays the iconic role of Hank McKenna in the Alfred Hitchcock film, The Man Who Knew Too Much. And he was his first time making a public appearance ever with his sister in a professional way.
Oh, wow.
And for many, many years, he hadn't been seen in public in this way. It was lovely to have him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That really sounds wonderful. And especially nice to hear, too. I love that the smaller venue at the El Portal.
Yes.
It's called the Monroe Forum
now. The Monroe Forum.
Because, there's not a bad seat in the place. It's almost cabaret style. Do you play out in the open area, like in the thrust area there with it?
I do. I have a baby grand.
I've seen a couple things there that have been a little farther back.
Yeah, I have a baby grand and a bass player in the show. But absolutely, and that's the one thing, getting used to that half horseshoe and making sure everybody doesn't feel left out. And
Scott, this is the question I always ask people about this, and Michael's heard it a million times. I'm always curious with something like this, things that have music or something. Is your narrative first and then you find the songs that fit, or did you pick the songs and then sort of write your narrative after?
I love that question. It ended up being a little bit of both.
Okay.
I knew, I always get scared to say this number because people always think, oh my God, that's a lot of songs. But you have to remember songs back then could be as short as a minute long.
Right.
I do parts of or whole songs to 28 songs. And so, I knew that there were that list of six of her biggest hits that had to be in the show. And of course, I wanted to do in the show. So those were a given. But then when I figured out the storytelling that I wanted to tell, she recorded almost 1,000 songs during her career. And my only little caveat I give myself is to make sure that I don't do anything in the show that she didn't cover. So
what's the running time of the show?
It ends up being, and last night was hard to tell because we had a, you know, we talked
about
all
those
co-stars
dogs and everything. And,
yes, many dogs, many dogs. We did a doggy fashion show midway through. It runs, it's about 2 hours with an intermission.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So just very, very easy to, you know, not like, I thought we could be, you know, you hear 28 songs and you think, well, you know, there's a meal break.
No, you know, it's, but it's because, and part of it, I'm doing medleys and pieces of songs, right. But we touch on at least 28 songs and we've added. I didn't do last night because of the extra things, but every night during the rest of the show, I'll be doing something called Pick of the Day. It sort of helps with my ADD-ness. But it's after the show when I meet people, even though I do all those songs, someone will say, oh, I wish you would have done this song. So we've added all of those songs to a little bowl. And each night I will do a song I've never done before at every performance.
Oh, that's great. So you could see the show a couple of times and see. And 2 hours is perfect, though. With an intermission, that's great.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, that's... Oh, I'm interested to see this.
It moves. So you don't really feel like it's 2 hours. You want kind of more...
I love
it's over
that.
Right?
Well, you know, right. My director, Richard Israel, and I are very singular.
The great
Richard Israel.
I love Richard Israel.
Been on the show a couple of times.
He's amazing.
Yes, he is.
And his taste is good, and we both are on the same track of keep it moving so that we earn the moments when we get those
And when I
moments.
Talked to him last night, I was saying congratulations. He said, I didn't do anything. He said, Scott has done it all. I just made a light change here. We did this or that.
That was, well, that
very
was
modest.
He's
that was...
very modest, but he was more instrumental. He is such beautiful taste.
Yes, he does.
Yes.
That's what that was going to be my question. How much did he weigh in? Was there any weigh in on content from the director? Or,
you know? Absolutely. I mean, and you know, really,
some people, you know, they put something together and it's like it's engraved in stone; it can't be moved. You know?
No, I constantly want it to become better and perfect. You know, I'm always striving towards that, and we're constantly changing and figuring out this works or this works in a certain venue, not here. So, absolutely, his input has been amazing.
And your band, Bob Bremstein and Paul Morin.
Yeah. How great are they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bob, I know. And Paul, I met last night, too. But Bob just killed at the piano.
Amazing. Yeah. And I don't know if I should make it sound like we've been rehearsing years and years and years. But he is new to the show and only had about 10 hours of rehearsal.
Yeah.
And our bass player went through the show one time in its entirety before we did the show last night.
Never would have known that.
Yeah,
last night.
A great musician.
Yeah,
don't you love people that are just at the top of their game? Like
absolutely,
and lovely men too.
We are talking about Doris and Me, the Doris Day Songbook, starring Scott Dreyer. This runs July 24th, opening tonight, to August 3rd. Another brief run, so catch this while you can. Celebrating Doris Day's 90th birthday. Tickets elportaltheater.com. Theater has the R-E spelling. Elportaltheater.com. And one of the things I always push for things that are over in that NoHo area, it's one of the few things that we have in Los Angeles, and when we have it, we should embrace it. You can park. You can walk to 24 restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
Get there early, and that there's a sausage place right down the street from there. I'm serious. Have you seen this?
Of course, serious.
Yeah, there is.
Where is it?
There's an artisanal sausage place. Artisanal. Do you like the way that?
I miss that. Yep.
I did.
No, it's just a little alcove. As you go, I guess, south on before you hit Magnolia, and it looks like a gastropub.
Which side of the street?
On the same side as El Portal.
Oh, okay.
Maybe a block or so, and it's a little hard to spot, and I wish I had the name, but we'll give the name. But artisanal homemade sausages and craft beers and all of these things, and it's a very inexpensive dinner, but it's good.
Yeah.
And of course, any excuse to go to Pit Fire to have the sausage from
or the
pizza or the Federal,
right.
Or what's the other one? The Bow and Trust.
Oh,
the other
one
owned by the Federal people.
Yeah.
A lot of options around there.
I'm a foodie. You have my interest for sure.
And they finally changed the meters that they're more than an hour, aren't they?
Well, God bless them.
Don't you remember that whole debacle?
They have so much of my money.
Oh, really?
Boo. Then you should get a refund, maybe.
Right.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe not according to them, but
No, but I mean, I know it sounds silly to talk so much about it, but, you know, we're not New York and Chicago where it's just let's hop a cab and meet at the restaurant. And when those. And the other thing, too, you don't even have to drive there because you got the Orange Line stop right there, which Monica and I do all the time. Because, as you know, I like the martinis, Michael.
Me knows you do.
Won't get in the
car. And you know the El Portal. I mean, Scott's working at the El Portal, one of our greatest historic theaters. They also have a beautiful second theater there, which is a larger space, which right. has the fabulous Sally Struthers in Always Patsy Cline.
Which is amazing, right amazing.
And I understand one of the best ever productions that the El Bortel has had. They're quite proud of this.
Those women are great.
Apparently, one of the greater Patsy Clines to play the role. If Sally Struthers plays, I guess...
She plays the fan.
The fan, yeah. Okay, okay. But I was reading an article about both of them, but I was astounded by the history of the woman who played Patsy Cline.
I think her name is Kate Calvert. Is that correct?
I think Carter.
Carter.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, it's Joanne Worley.
Oh,
I'm saying.
Joanne
what
was at his
chameleon.
Show
that, she was at the opening for Patsy, too. Yeah.
Oh, was she really?
Yeah.
And Joanne had an emission of Scott's show last night, was selling.
I heard this.
Yes. Selling anything she could. I mean, it wasn't even put out yet. It was, you know, for later at the end of the evening. But anybody that would buy a drink from her, she was collecting their money, and not just for a certain amount. She'd take a 20 and she wouldn't give the change back. It was all going to the animals.
Okay. Yeah. I forgot about the charity thing, and I said, well, that's very sad.
Well, you know, Michael, she's president of Actors and Others for Animals, so she's a big animal person,
she's
too.
She's right on. Yeah.
Yeah. Lovely.
Yeah. Richard just walked up to her and said, is any of that money going to Mexico?
Hilarious.
Oh, my.
So, Scott, you've been doing this 2.5 years. I know you've had great success with it.
Thank
Do you ever think, okay, I've done it, and I'm going to move on now to another project?
Well, of course, you always want to do other projects, yeah. but this is probably what I love doing more than anything. Yeah. I get to celebrate someone that has made such an impact in my life. And this material is timeless. It's the Great American Songbook.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so great. And to be able to tell her stories and celebrate her life, it never gets old to me. And especially, you know, because these songs are so quintessential. I mean, even last night, before I started singing Secret Love, I heard someone go, oh, this is my favorite song.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think it's got to be the best it's ever been. Here we go.
Yeah.
You know, you just want it because you know, music is so powerful. We are immediately transported back to the moment we first heard it and what it meant to us.
Okay.
So it's lovely.
And I told him this last night, and I do mean this, and I don't mean to be paying lip service here on this program, but this show works because of Scott's passion for this woman and her work and what she has meant to him through his life, as he said. But you are so sincere and so truly devoted to the content of what you're talking to the audience about when you're speaking about her and your relationship with her, where it has arrived after all of these years, after not having one, which is fascinating information. And certainly, you know, very interesting information about Doris herself and some of the things I'm sure that many audience people don't even know, you know, happened during her career. And it's just, it's a high and low thing that you just get so involved with you and you get so emotionally involved in what you're talking about. It just is, it's a very special, very unique kind of show. I don't think I've ever seen anything like this based on a subject matter like this.
Thank you so much.
And it's very powerful stuff that you're doing up there.
Thank you. Those words mean more to me than you ever will know, truly.
It really sounds it, just from the way you're describing it. You know, the one always likes to sort of stamp a label on something. Oh, this is what it is. And you think, oh, it's a Doris Day jukebox thing. It's just going to be. But it sounds
so
like
not.
It's so it's, much richer and has so much more depth.
It really is. We call it Doris and Me because it's how she has affected my life. And, of course, one of my favorite things after the show is people say, oh, I love all the crazy things you say you do about Doris Day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you made all that up. And I always say, no, I do all those things.
Sadly. But now I'm making money talking about it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Hysterical.
Hilarious. So,
but as a child, you explained in the show last night that you had a very different kind of a childhood, and you were it was a very kind of limited exposure to a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had a great childhood, of course, like all of us, but just my media intake as a very young kid was more limited, and so the little peeks that I got at movies and films and music, all of those things are more important to me because I got so few of them. You know, like I didn't get inundated by any of that. I tell in the show that true story. Until I was 17 years old, I thought The Sound of Music ended with the wedding because my mom would turn it off. And I would, and so when I was literally channel surfing at a friend's house one day, and we saw, you know, the Nazi stuff, and I thought it was a sequel to The Sound of Music because I'd never seen that.
Wow.
Because my mom was like, "No Nazis," but as I said last night,
as would have been the case during that time.
But really, the Family Film Festival is how I discovered Doris Day through the great Tom Hatton. And that was one thing that kind of slipped through the radar, and I was allowed to watch him, and I loved all the stories that he told about backstage stories, but I also loved he showed a lot of Doris Day movies, and that's when I fell in love with her at 11 years old.
Speaking of celebs in the audience, the woman who played Gretel as a young girl in the movie The Sound of Music was in the audience last night as well, all grown up.
All grown up, but of course she was in my favorite Doris Day movie, The Thrill of It All.
Right.
And was with her brother from that, Brian Nash. They hadn't seen each other since she was 22 years old. So when I got her, she said, "Oh, I wish you could get my brother. I've lost track of him." So that I made it my goal. So I created that last night so that they would have a reunion, and they were both
amazing.
So happy.
Oh,
it was magical in so many levels because of that.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
Well, Paul, let's give the information out again on this show.
This is we're talking about Doris and Me, the Doris Day Songbook, starring Scott Dreyer. This is playing from July 24th to August 3rd, and at the El Portal Theater in beautiful NoHo Arts District there. Tickets 818-508-4200 or El Portal Theater, theater has the RE spelling, .com. And once again, just through August 3rd, so buy tickets early and often.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So it's come to that time.
It is that time.
Yeah, where we
ask our guests to share a tale, if they would. Right.
Ladies first, my love.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm in an outdoor amphitheater in San Diego called the Starlight Amphitheater, where the planes fly right overhead and you stop your performance. So we're doing my one and only. It's very slick stage. They put a special coating on the stage so it won't be slick. Does not work. So they decide to put Coke syrup all over the stage. Now it becomes like grease. So now we have all of the guys out there with ammonia on rags cleaning it all up. They missed a few spots. I come on stage at one point in a beaded gown in high heels, and I swing myself around in the proscenium and take a pose. It's very 20s show, so everything's very posed, but I am beaded, 200 pounds of dress, right? I swing around, hit one of those spots, and I fly up and hit the stage so fast that I get a black eye.
Oh, my gosh.
And I laid there while 4,000 people just kind of went,
Oh my!
And started laughing. What else are they going to do? So Kirby Ward, bless his heart, drags me to my feet. After a while, I realized where I am and what's going on, and I kind of came back.
Yeah,
I was knocked out.
Wow.
And where were you in the show? Like, how far?
Oh, maybe the second scene.
Oh.
So after that, doesn't really matter what you do.
No.
It's like, I could fall now. It doesn't really matter.
There's no covering.
No.
Yeah.
That theater is where I saw my very, very first show as a child.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
It was Bye Bye Birdie.
Oh,
it
wow.
Is. It's, I've worked at Starlight, too. Yeah. Talk about... like now, they can't do anything there because it's an airport, literally.
Truly, yeah.
The first show you ever saw was Bye Bye Birdie?
Yeah.
How funny that's what you would end up doing.
Yes,
was
I
in
yeah.
it?
You could have been.
No, I don't think I was, but
not at 32.
Scott, what's your tale?
Well, of course, we all have the audience things. I love with Doris and Me every once in a while, the audience, it's so intimate. Someone will, you know, in the middle of me telling a story, go, "I can't hear him." You know, that will happen. But probably, and I feel badly telling this tale because the actress that missed her cue is one of the sweetest, most gorgeous human beings on the planet. But, you know, I've done 10 productions of Little Shop of Horrors. And the last production that I did of it, the scene Get It with the plant, midway through that song, Audrey and the dentist are supposed to come back in. Well, she had totally spaced on the entrance and she was in the ladies' room. But the problem with that moment is I'm having a whole scene of dialogue with the plant. And of course, there's no way for the plant to ad lib at all because it's a voice and a puppeteer. So literally, you know, I'm having to make up crap, you know, and this time it just feels like it's 30 hours long. And then she's so sweet. My Audrey comes on stage and she's crying through the whole scene because she has let me down. She said, "Of all actors, I didn't want to let you down." And I'm like, "Baby, come on, come back. We got to do the scene. Yeah. Here we go. Let's get into the man-eating plant. Here we go."
You know, Scott, I have to say this real quickly. I don't even ask why, but I do watch the Disney Channel. And occasionally. And yeah. It was late at night, usually when I'm, you know, going to sleep. And this man was a guest star on
Suite Life on Deck.
Yes, and I just saw it the other night. And I mean, I saw it because you were on. I went, what? And I, of course, watched it. And you were hilarious.
Thank you.
That characterization was like
amazing.
Thank
you. Can I tell you, it's so weird. Of everything I've done on camera, because that was a spinoff from the Zack and Cody, and it's the only show that Ashley Tisdale came back for, I am recognized more for that one episode than anything else.
Crazy good.
But such a thank you. It was so fun to get to play. It's fun to play bratty sometimes.
Yeah.
And he is so bratty.
And British and bratty, right?
And British. And that's something that I brought. Talk about bringing something, you know, the character wasn't British. And when I got the script, I thought, he's British. And I didn't ask. I just read it that way. And they rewrote the whole character
there
for
you
me.
Go.
Yeah.
Wow.
Big choices.
Mm-hmm. How nice to have both of you here.
Really
nice today.
Pleasure.
Thank you for having
pleasure.
Us.
I know.
This is so lovely. And to get to be next to cute Cynthia.
All right. We're going to kick off next week's show, Michael, about the stuff that I have to talk about because we're
running out
of time.
Oh, my gosh, you need a minute.
So, we're good. Pleasure having both of you on.
Thank
really
you for having
it.
Us.
And
thank
we'll, you. We'll see you next week.
Yay.
All right. On the radio.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.